Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. Water is a critically important resource, especially in an arid state like New Mexico, where many of our rivers, streams, and arroyos only run intermittently in response to snowmelt and rain. The Trump administration recently proposed rules that would exclude many of these intermittent and ephemeral waterways from protection under the Clean Water Act. Environmental advocates say that this would make more than 90% of New Mexico's surface water vulnerable to pollution, but many folks in the mining, agriculture, and ranching industries believe that the move would correct governmental overreach codified during the Obama years. We are going to be talking about these proposed rules today and how they would affect our states, and we want to hear from you. Where do you think that the line between government oversight and property rights lies when it comes to a shared resource like water? What questions do you have about how our water is protected in New Mexico? Email us at letstalk@kunm.org, tweet using the hashtag #letstalknm, or call in live at 277-5866 during the show. Now, I am joined today by Rebecca Roos, the Water Protection Division Director with the New Mexico Environment Department, John Verhuell, Assistant General Counsel for the department, and Zachary Ogaz, an attorney with Law and Resource Planning Associates, a firm which specializes in water law and represents the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District. Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thanks,
Sam. Good morning.
So, Rebecca and John, let's start with some basics. What makes the waterways in New Mexico different than in other parts of the country?
Well, in New Mexico, as you said in your opening, we have a number of waterways that don't flow year-round. We have a lot of intermittent streams and rivers, ephemeral waters, much more so than what people may be familiar with in the eastern part of the United States. We're an arid region, and that means that the water that we have is incredibly precious and a resource that we need to protect in every way that we can. And that's regardless of whether the rivers flow wide and strong year-round.
Just to put some numbers on that, a little less than 7% of New Mexico's streams and rivers are perennial, with the remaining 93% being intermittent or ephemeral. And, of course, water is a key cultural resource in New Mexico as well.
Now, John, can you tell us a little bit about the Clean Water Act? What is its intention, and how does it work to protect water in New Mexico specifically?
Well, the Clean Water Act is a federal statute that's been around for the better part of 50 years, and the purpose of the Clean Water Act is to protect the waters of the United States. But almost immediately, once the statute was enacted years ago, the question arose, what are the waters of the United States? And that's where we get to this interpretation of what are waters of the U.S. or what is WOTUS. And that's been the subject of several Supreme Court cases throughout the years, a lot of cases in appellate courts, federal appellate courts, and more recently a couple different rulemakings by, as you mentioned, in 2015, the Obama administration, and right now the 2019 proposed rule by the current administration.
Okay. And Zach, I did want to talk to you a little bit about what are the issues around interpreting this phrase, waters of the United States, and how has that played out in New Mexico specifically?
Well, one of the big factors there is the reach of the federal government. You know, the federal government has been given, you know, a certain amount of powers from the Constitution. One of those powers is the right to regulate interstate commerce. Mm-hmm. You know, now, so can the government regulate, you know, each and every water in New Mexico, whether it's an interstate water, interstate stream like the Rio Grande, or, you know, a much smaller, you know, intermittent or ephemeral arroyo, you know, that could be just out in the West Mesa? You know, at what point does the federal government's reach, you know, stop, you know, or can the federal government go ahead and regulate every single water within the boundaries of the United States? You know, so there's some real federalism and states' rights issues there.
Can you give me a sense of how this has played out prior to the 2015 Obama rules?
Well, yeah, as John had mentioned, you know, when the Clean Water Act was enacted, we had the, you know, very vague phrase, waters of the United States. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean every water in the United States, or is that more of a limitation? You know, did Congress, you know, specifically use that language to say, you know, waters of the United States being, you know, only, you know, those waters of the United States, or is it all waters of the United States? So, yeah, I know that's a very vague distinction there already, but, you know, the courts have had their turn at, you know, the Supreme Court has had, you know, the opportunity to try to interpret what that phrase means. The key case out of the Supreme Court that, you know, was, you know, maybe an attempt to resolve that, you know, the vagueness and the ambiguity of the phrase was U.S. v. Rapanos, you know, which is a very big case, you know, Rapanos. You know, and what had happened was that the court had actually split. You know, there were three different opinions. You know, there was the Scalia plurality, you had John Paul Stevens' plurality, and then you had Justice Kennedy writing alone and joining the Scalia plurality in the decision alone.
And this was about the waters of the United States term?
Right. Okay. And so the Scalia plurality had chosen a very narrow view of what the waters of the United States meant. You know, decision or his opinion had basically said that, you know, the waters needed to be traditional navigable waters or, you know, more perennial in nature. You know, on the other side, you had the Stevens opinion, which said, you know, we're going to go with the much broader opinion here, you know, and say that, you know, as long as there is, you know, some kind of a connection or a bigger connection, and I know that's a bit more of the Kennedy piece as well, but, you know, there, as long as there is a potential for impact onto a traditional navigable water or water of the United States, well, then that's also going to be covered by the Clean Water Act.
So how did it shake out?
Well, so what it ended up happening, you know, agencies were confused. They're like, okay, well, still that's, you know, so we have four justices on one side, we have four justices on the other side. It's kind of drawn, you know, it's a total split. You know, circuits had been split for a while as well. You know, so there still isn't any clarity as to what this really means. So the EPA decided, okay, we're going to take a crack at it, you know, come up with a rulemaking, and we're going to just try to just say, okay, here's what we think the waters of the United States means.
Okay.
Now, you end up getting a lot of challenges on that, you know, from the Obama 2015 ones.
Okay, so let's talk about the Obama 2015 rule. How did that define waters of the United States? Rebecca?
The Obama administration developed a rule over several years of outreach and public comment. They did a lot of scientific study and got input from scientific experts, and resulted in a 2015 rule that adhered more closely to the Justice Kennedy opinion in the Rapanos case that
which
Zach
was?
Just mentioned, which was broader than the Scalia plurality to encompass that waters of the United States would generally encompass any waters that have a significant nexus to traditional navigable waters.
And navigable means like you can take a boat on it? What does that mean?
It means you can, you have, you could foreseeably have navigation within the waterway. So yes, in plain language, boats in the river.
Okay. So in 2015, Obama's administration passed these rules. In January of this year, the Trump administration proposed rules that went counter to that. From my understanding, these rules would exclude the so-called ephemeral waters from protection. What exactly are ephemeral waters, and how would this rule impact New Mexico, Rebecca?
So ephemeral waters are those waterways that run when there's precipitation. So generally rain or snowmelt, then you see water flowing through that waterway. And the impact of this proposed regulation from the current EPA and Army Corps of Engineers is that those waters that are ephemeral would not be subject to Clean Water Act jurisdiction. And what that means in very practical terms is that the protections of the Clean Water Act that control where pollution goes into our surface waters would not be applicable to these ephemeral waters. And in New Mexico, we have ephemeral waters that when they do flow, they're carrying water, that precipitation that gets collected in those ephemeral streams, they're carrying that into other waterways, including, for example, the Rio Grande.
So, John, you've been with the New Mexico Environment Department for a while now.
A little over 5 years.
A little over 5 years in both the Grisham administration and the Martinez administration. So from my understanding, in response to this EPA proposal, the New Mexico Environment Department drafted a letter outlining some objections to the Trump proposed rules. But just a few years ago, the Environmental Department entered into a lawsuit against the Obama-era rules that would have protected these ephemeral waterways. Can you tell us about how this about-face came about?
Well, we submitted comments in response to the 2019 proposed Waters of the U.S. definition. That's part of the federal rulemaking process. The government issues a proposed rule and various agencies, various people comment on it, and then the federal agencies evaluate those comments, possibly respond to them, and then eventually issue a final rule. So that's what we submitted were comments. And our comments, we believe, were constructive in nature, intended to help EPA craft a rule that would, result in the appropriate level of protection, specifically for us in New Mexico, because that's what we were concerned about. We believe we may be one of the states most significantly impacted by this 2019 proposed rule in terms of the exclusion of intermittent and ephemeral waters, and we have such a large percentage of those waters within the state. It's correct. We previously had been part of a lawsuit in federal district court in North Dakota, which was challenging the proposed 2015 rule. I was not the attorney on that case at that time. And, of course, as you point out, we have a new administration and, of course, new leadership at the Environment Department. And regardless of any issues that we may have had with the 2015 rule, which, by the way, never went into effect in New Mexico.
Because of these lawsuits, right?
Exactly. There was a temporary injunction put in place by the district court in North Dakota. But regardless of any issues we may have had with that rule, the 2019 rule is just it's not good for New Mexico. And so that was basically the gist of our comments.
Okay. And Zach, your firm often represents farmers and ranchers. I wanted to get a sense for how folks in those communities see both the 2015 rule and the proposed rules.
Well, to give you an idea, the 2015 rules, were based on, a much broader opinion on what the waters of the United States was. So that, incorporated many more potential, confusion points, I guess I'll call them, like a ditch, something that, a farmer may be using, to irrigate his land and maybe doesn't use all the water, and so that water then gets released down into canal, down into the various other waterways, and then finally maybe making its way down to the Rio Grande.
So the question is whether that water would be protected under the Clean Water Act.
Right. So is that a water of the United States? Again, the rule had been, does it have a significant nexus? Does it have some kind of a connection to a traditional navigable water? And how big is that nexus? How big does that connection need to be actually be there?
So, how would someone who is working in this industry, like the agricultural industry, how would they go about making sure that their waters were protected under the Clean Water Act or were not?
Well, really, the only way is to hire an expert, someone I guess like myself or like John or Rebecca, to go ahead and explain to them, well, here's what it could be, because again, there's still not much clarity on whether or not this is or is not a water of the United States. Now there is much more clarity, and the Obama administration, the 2015 version, did provide more clarity. But now we are seeing whether or not a agricultural ditch is a water of the United States or not. So there has been a little bit of improvement there.
So this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this controversy? How should the government work with landowners when it comes to precious resources like water? Our number is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. We are also live tweeting the show, so send us your comments using the hashtag Let's Talk NM, and we're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM, representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
At the Vein Center of New Mexico, patients learn about varicose vein symptoms like tired, aching legs and treatment options. Dr. Michael Harding and his team are proud sponsors of KUNM. More at veincenternm.com.
Clarice Assad was born and raised in Brazil, but has lived in the U.S. for a few decades now. So when she's asked where home is, she doesn't say North or South America. She says the Americas. Coming up, a piece called Without Borders by Clarice Assad on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about the Clean Water Act and how a proposed rule by the Trump administration might affect New Mexico's waterways. We are taking your calls, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. And Zach, I'd like to go back to you real quick here and talk about this issue with interpreting what is a water of the United States and how it applies to things like acequias and so forth. Can you give me a sense for how that might, does that become a burden for people in the agricultural industries trying to figure out which waterways would be protected? And then how do they go about making sure that those are, what is the permitting process like for a landowner?
Well, certainly the lack of clarity creates, at the very least, a little more stress on that farmer. Or, you know, whoever happens to be using, that point source to that ditch, whether or not, that person knows whether or not they are going to be protected or whether that waterway is a protected source or not, will require different procedures for that individual and whether or not they, can use that ditch in certain ways or not, And so when you have a lack of certainty or understanding on how the law is applied, well, now you have to go hire somebody to help you figure out that issue or to help decrease, that risk that it might be a water of the United States and you might be liable under the Clean Water Act. So there's much more uncertainty, which makes one very uncomfortable with being able to invest in that farm. If you aren't really clear on whether or not that, that dish will be a point of liability for you or will be or become a risk for you, well, now it may not be worth farming that acre or not. So a lot of times that lack of clarity and that uncertainty can be the difference between, farming an acre or not farming.
Okay, now we have a comment from Dixon. He says that water resources are important. He spends a lot of time hiking and camping and hunting, and he'd like to see water resources protected for future generations. And I think that's a great time to welcome Rachel Kahn of Amigos Bravos into the conversation. Amigos Bravos is an environmental advocacy group that focuses on river conservation. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Ty. Thanks for having me on.
Certainly. And so, Rachel, Amigos Bravos has also made comments on the proposed Trump administration rule that would exclude these ephemeral waterways from the Clean Water Act protection. Amigos Bravos characterized them as a major change in how the EPA operates. What makes this so different from earlier attempts to interpret the waters of the United States that the CWA covers?
Yeah, it is a major change. And namely, I think Mr. Verhill mentioned this, that New Mexico would be what we think here at Amigos Bravos would be the most negatively impacted state in the country by this proposed dirty water rule. Mostly because we have so many of these smaller waterways, these ephemeral and intermittent waterways, but also because we don't have any state program in place, permitting program in place. So without the EPA's permitting program and jurisdiction over those waters, we don't have any way to control pollution into these critical waters across our state. Amigos Bravos has been following this issue and involved in this issue since 2001 with the original Supreme Court decision, and then in 2006 with the Rapanos. We've been following it and its impact impact on New Mexico for many years. We have a lot of concerns about what this new rule would do, and actually think that it provides a lot more uncertainty. The 2019 dirty water rule is dependent on this definition of perennial, which is not an easy thing to do. We have a whole hydrology protocol at the state level that is a very in-depth process to figure out whether something's perennial or intermittent or ephemeral. So relying just on having perennial waters be jurisdictional is not providing more clarity. In fact, it could be very labor-intensive determining what waters are jurisdictional under this new proposed rule.
Can you tell me why that would be difficult to figure out? It seems like perennial should be a fairly simple term, like it flows all the time, right? John, you're shaking your head at me. Could you go ahead and... Sorry, Rachel, is what John has something to say here?
I'll be brief, but you know, you and I were talking before the show, Ty, about the much wetter year that we're having in 2019. You had a show about that a few weeks ago, the bigger snowpack that we've had in New Mexico and that they had up in Colorado. And so the question with perennial becomes, okay, so it's got to run all year to be perennial. Which year? Is it in a drought year? What if you have 10 drought years in a row, such as we've had in New Mexico in the past? But then other years, it runs all year simply because you had more snowpack, more rain during the year. So it's a very hard thing to define in terms of over what time span. And then with climate change and more extreme weather events and changes in weather patterns within regions, that just adds another layer of complexity.
Okay, so Rachel, let's go back to you and go ahead and continue your thoughts about what makes this different from previous EPA attempts to interpret the waters of the United States.
So I'd like to go back first to the 2015 rule. The 2015 rule did not expand jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. In fact, there were fewer waters protected under the proposed 2015 Clean Water Rule than were protected under, say, the Reagan administration prior to those 2001 and 2006 Supreme Court decisions. And the 2015 rule specifically maintained all the agricultural exemptions that were included in the Clean Water Act that have always been there. Those are large exemptions, and that's appropriate, that our country is dependent on our farmers. And so those exemptions have existed in the Clean Water Act since the beginning, and they were carried forward in the 2015 rule. The 2015 rule also specifically added, in response to comments, specifically added language that exempted certain ditches from the Clean Water Act, from jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act. So I think that the 2015 rule provided more clarity, and then the 2019 rule that has come along is very confusing about what is going to be covered and what's not. We're very concerned about some of our iconic rivers may fall into that category of unprotected waters.
Which iconic waters do you believe might be defined that way?
So we have from the north to the south part of the state, there's many waters that are not now called into question. We have the Rio Costilla in the northern part of the state. This is the river that flows from our Valle Vidal in the northern part of the state, and it is currently it always is an interstate water, but it's currently given jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act because of that category, because it's an interstate water. This 2019 Dirty Water Rule takes away that jurisdictional category. So interstate waters no longer just on that category will be protected. And the Rio Costilla runs dry before it joins with the Rio Grande. So there are questions about whether that's an ephemeral stretch at the bottom of the Rio Costilla. And there's this proposed rule calls into question whether even perennial stretches of waters like the Rio Costilla, if they are not connected to a traditionally navigable water like the Rio Grande by perennial stretches, it's called into question whether they would be protected.
So if they're not connected to these kind of larger waterways, I mean, Why wouldn't it be enough to protect the larger ones like the Rio Grande, just to make sure that these major waterways are protected under the CWA?
Well, then you could have discharges to any of these smaller waterways. The Gila down in the southern part of the state also is currently given jurisdiction through the interstate category. It is not considered a traditionally navigable water. And so it potentially would lose protection under the Clean Water Act under this proposed rule. So you could have, there's a major river in the state where you could have discharges from industry, from wastewater treatment plants that would go unregulated. So I think it's a major concern for the health of all New Mexicans, including our small farmers.
Okay, so what do you think? Is this an issue of property rights versus government overreach? What's an alternative way to make sure a shared resource like water is protected? Give us a call and tell us about it at 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code. Or email letstalk@kunm.org. And at the center of this debate are New Mexico farmers and ranchers, some of whom feel that the proposed rules would give much-needed clarification to an often murky permitting process and correct what they see as governmental overreach in the Obama years. And one of these is Tom Sidwell, the president of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
We're doing great. So, Tom, the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association has commented in favor of the new rules that would exclude ephemeral waterways from the Clean Water Act. Why is that?
Well, primarily the ephemeral waterways are just that. They're not permanent waters. These ephemeral waterways, gullies, what have you, run only when it rains hard. Many of them, depending on the intensity and duration of the rain, will not reach a navigable water, and so we believe that the ephemeral waterways, which there's a lot of them in New Mexico, should have never been considered jurisdictional under the Clean Water Act.
So, do you see those 2015 Obama era rules as government overreach?
That's correct. We do, and one of the things about the 2019 rule is it clarifies and simplifies what what the navigable waters are of the U.S. or what waters are covered under the Clean Water Act. But just as importantly are waters that are excluded from the waters of the U.S., such as groundwater. And we talked about ephemeral waters, which include the surface runoffs. There are ditches that are excluded, and I know our county governments were concerned about roadside ditches and what that would mean for maintenance of the roads and the bar ditches. The 15 rule was not clear. We feel it was an overreach.
Okay, so Rebecca, I have a question for you. So Tom raises the point of waters on a private land or waters that simply don't ever get close to reaching a major waterway. Why should those be covered?
That's a great question. And so it's easy when we talk about this issue to gravitate toward the larger waterways and think about the topic in those terms. Ephemeral and intermittent streams and other waters are very important in many cases to many New Mexicans, regardless of whether or not they eventually drain into a large waterway like the Rio Grande. For example, some of our ephemeral streams in this state are really critical sources for aquifer recharge. We rely on those aquifers for drinking water, for irrigation, to support our society and economic prosperity in this state. Some ephemeral waters or streams that have ephemeral reaches, like the Santa Fe River, are also critical sources of drinking water themselves. If you have an ephemeral stretch of the Santa Fe River that's not protected, and there are more pollutants introduced into that riverbed, they can hang out there even when it's dry and then get picked up when it rains again and flow right into the drinking water intake. That causes problems for our utilities to treat the water and make sure that safe drinking water is delivered to our community members. It also can affect other downstream uses, including agricultural uses of that water. They want that water to be clean to water their cattle and other agricultural and livestock uses. So it's really much more complex than just thinking about it in terms of our wider, more perennially flowing waters.
Okay, so Tom, I'd like to go back to you. I think Rebecca raises some good points. How do we make sure that that ranchers are good stewards of resources that are vitally important to the state as a whole without, you know, codifying it?
Well, and that's largely an educational process. And I would say that the majority of our ranchers are good stewards of the land. There's always going to be problem areas, and that's true with any industry. Now, with ephemeral waterways that Rebecca brought up, do we know what the physical, chemical, and biological characteristics are of those waters? Do we have the baseline data? And do we have a monitoring program to monitor them over a long period of time? You know, on my ranch, I don't have that. Now, when the 2015 rule came about, I considered doing that to determine over the long term what is happening with the waters that are falling on my ranch and leaving the ranch. So if we're going to be concerned about ephemeral waters, then we need to be able to know what baseline data is there and be able to monitor it and quantify what is going on. This is the problem with the significant nexus. Is significant is, you know, largely not quantifiable. And then secondly, who quantifies what is significant or not? This 2019 rule basically replaces a significant nexus with direct hydrologic connection, and which simplifies and clarifies the rule a lot more.
So, Tom, I have a question for you. Why wouldn't waters that flow on private land but don't reach a major waterway, why wouldn't they warrant protection?
Why wouldn't they want?
Why shouldn't they be protected under the Clean Water Act?
Well, first of all, you know, is there a physical, chemical, or biological problem? You know, the Clean Water Act was to restore and maintain the physical, biological, and chemical characteristics of the water, of the nation's water. And do we know if there's a problem, such as my ranch? Now, I'm at the top of the watershed for the Canadian River. And when it rains on the cap rock, well, that water, of course, runs down. And so I have one major arroyo that carries a lot of water off of the ranch. But is it geologic or is it anthropogenic? And that water most years will spread out and go into the soil before it ever reaches any other water courseway. On the rest of my ranch, when we have water runoff, it soaks into the ground. and that's largely due to my management practices. The water used to run off the ranch and no longer does. Our dirt tanks are drying up and water is infiltrating into the soil, and that shows up in our static water level in our wells.
Okay, Tom, I'm going to have to interrupt you right now. We are going to have to take a quick break. Thank you for joining us on Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We will be back in a moment.
The summer powwow season is in full swing, and that means several powwows happen every weekend until the fall. Whether you live for the powwow or you're looking forward to attending your first, it's good to know your way around the different powwow styles, customs, and etiquette. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we talk powwow.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
If you have a member of the family who isn't driving anymore, encourage them to donate their vehicle to KUNM. We'll arrange for towing the car, even if they don't live in New Mexico. We can arrange for pickup anywhere in the country. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. We make it easy to donate a car or truck, even from a distance. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about the Trump administration's proposed changes to the Clean Water Act and what they mean for New Mexico. Give us a call at 277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag Let's Talk NM. And on the line with me is Tom Sidwell of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. Tom, so could you tell me, how would the new rules change how your organization operates? How your ranch operates?
Well, our members, for one thing, it gives our members more clarity and as far as what is a jurisdictional water. And I think that's very important. With the 2015 rule, there was a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, as an example, if a rancher built a stock tank, was he going to have to get a 404 permit to do so? And that becomes a very expensive and cumbersome process. And I think this simplifies the ability for them to do that. It also, I believe, clarifies the responsibilities under the federal and the state governments. I think clarity and clarification of what this means is the biggest benefit to our members.
Okay, so Rachel, I'd like to go ahead and go to you for a response to that. Is Tom correct? I'm sorry, Rebecca. Rebecca is who I'm.
Sure, thanks, Ty. I think that regulatory certainty is a good thing. The Environment Department supports that. We hope that our comments reflect that, that we think that greater regulatory certainty of what's covered and what's not covered under the Clean Water Act is better for everyone involved. And so we have indicated to EPA our interest in working with them to help achieve greater certainty in the final rule that they're currently in the process of developing. And I think the devil's in the details, of course, and you have different perspectives of what kind of certainty is going to be better. I think that in New Mexico, as Rachel mentioned earlier, because we don't have an established surface water pollution control program in New Mexico under state law, we in particular see the efforts that EPA has made in their proposed 2019 rule to clarify the roles between federal and state is a little different for us than it is for most other states in the U.S. who have established programs where they're actually implementing much of the Clean Water Act regulatory program regime on behalf of EPA, essentially. And we haven't done that in New Mexico. So part of the concern, I think, that is if this proposed rule were to go into effect as is. In New Mexico, while on its face it may, for some, provide more clarity, more certainty of what's in and what's out, what's under federal jurisdiction, what's under state jurisdiction, in New Mexico, it actually would create a significant vacuum of coverage that could generate, or we believe would generate, a great amount of additional confusion and uncertainty. So there's a lot of nuance in this, and we are uniquely situated in New Mexico, not just because of the nature of the arid region and the waterways that we've discussed this morning, but also with respect to just the legal landscape that is different from most other parts of the country, and we think not adequately addressed by EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers in their proposal.
So I do have a question from Laura. What about insecticides and chemicals going into the water? And an email comment from Christina, who says that the Trump proposed rule would cause the Santa Fe River to lose protection. And she points to a biofuel spill a few years ago that was cleaned up under the Obama rules. So Rachel, I'd like to, and I do mean Rachel this time, I'd like to go ahead and go to you with some thoughts on those comments.
I think those are very good points. I think that all New Mexicans are at risk, including our farmers and ranchers, are at risk from this rule, because our agricultural community, our municipalities, our people who recreate in or near our rivers all depend on clean water. And no body of water should be open for pollution or destruction. That's exactly what this proposal does by stripping Clean Water Act protections from critical streams and wetlands. So we've been talking mostly about ephemeral and intermittent streams that would lose protection under this proposed rule. But a lot of our wetlands here in the state would also lose protections. And here we have a situation in New Mexico where we first never had a lot of wetlands. We're an arid state. But we've already lost over 50% of the original wetlands of New Mexico, and we can't afford to lose more. They're critically important for providing numerous ecological functions to our watersheds, to our downstream communities, and opening those wetlands up for pollution and destruction doesn't make any sense for the future of New Mexico.
So, Zach, I'd like to go to you now. As someone who works with ranchers and farmers and so forth, you've mentioned that lack of clarity has been a problem historically with the Clean Water Act. Would the new proposed rules, would they provide enough clarity that it would outweigh whatever other problems there might be with protecting or not protecting ephemeral waters?
Well, I mean, clarity is always just a good thing for, you know, that you need before you go ahead and make any kind of business decision, whether you're going to farm an acre or you're going to, you know, put, you know, 100 head of cattle out on the range. You know, and that helps the farmer, you know, essentially, or the rancher to, you know, figure out what their costs might be. You know, what do I need to, you know, do I need to pay for infrastructure, you know, meters, like Tom had mentioned, to go ahead and figure out whether, you know, he can stay within the boundaries of that rule. And I think we're all, I mean, most folks are on the same page that we don't want to see the destruction of the state's waters. We all want to be good stewards of our land and our resources because we all benefit from clean water. You know, but it's the extent to which those regulations go. You know, again, I come back, you know, to the federalism issue, you know, what is the federal government's role and how far does that reach go as opposed to it being a state issue? And you can see that throughout the 2019 regulations that they were wanting to make sure that the states had a little bit more power, you know, to go ahead and enforce their own environmental programs. But, you know, when there isn't enough funding or staffing on the environmental, on the state's right side, well, then you end up getting that a bit of a gap there where suddenly, you know, where we were leaning on the EPA to come in and help us to enforce the Clean Water Act, now suddenly there isn't anyone there. So, yeah, it is a balance, of course, you know, being able to, you know, farm without, you know, large costs to make sure you're in compliance versus, you know, making sure that all waters of the state and the U.S. are protected.
Okay, I'd like to take a call now from Chuck in Albuquerque. Hello, Chuck. Hi, Chuck. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What would you like to add to the conversation today?
Well, I wanted to make a couple points. First of all, that I grew up back east and studied soils and hydrology back there and came out here. And one of the things that I've learned here in my time here is that in the Southwest, as opposed to back east, the streams feed the groundwater. That our ephemeral streams, our intermittent streams, and our permanently flowing rivers and streams are the main source of our groundwater. And so by and so much of our water supply, especially in the rural parts of the state, come from wells, that protecting those stream beds is important, because even the dry stream beds, because you're protecting the groundwater source, not just protecting the navigable waters. It's also that a question whether you, when you look at a visually dry stream bed, is it really dry? Because you can sometimes dig down a few inches or a foot, and you'll find actual flowing water because of that relationship between the streams and the groundwater. And my final comment is in reference to the one that Tom just made, I think, about federal versus state regulatory control over these issues, is that the benefit for a state like New Mexico of having it come from the control come from federal government is you can always petition to get funding coming from the federal government, as opposed to having to dig deeper into our more limited state resources.
Well, thank you, Chuck.
Those are my comments.
Now, Tom, what are your thoughts in response?
Well, I've heard that there's maybe a problem, but what are the facts? That's what I want to know. Okay. Show me the facts that there is a problem with ephemeral streams.
Now, Tom, is groundwater and aquifer recharge, is that a concern for you?
Well, it's a concern, but now, on my own ranch, we are getting aquifer recharge, and that's reflected by the static water levels, the increase in static water levels in my wells. So we are getting that. Now, are there pollutants going into the groundwater? No, I don't think so, because I don't have, refinery or anything like that, underground tanks or anything like that on the ranch where you might have leakage into the aquifer. Another thing, the state has a lot of money and the income from the oil and gas industry, and so the state should not have to rely on the federal government to do Clean Water Act.
Okay, that actually raises an interesting point, one that I'd like to put to you, Rebecca. So one of the issues, as Tom says, that makes these proposed rules so important in New Mexico is that there is not a state-level equivalent to the Clean Water Act. If these new rules get passed, would that be a possible solution to enact state-level rules that would have a similar effect to the 2015 rule?
I think it's definitely something that the state needs to look very closely at, both the current administration, the Environment Department, and our sister agencies, Office of State Engineer, Energy, Mineral, Natural Resources Department. We all have a stake in this from, a state government standpoint, and working, of course, with the legislature, because we would be talking about enacting new laws and authority for our state. So I think it's something that we need to look very closely at. It's something that the Environment Department is watching and thinking about as we consider the direction that the EPA and the Corps are going right now on this topic. And if we end up in a situation where the applicability of Clean Water Act is reduced by up to 96% of our waters in this state, I think it's imperative that we figure out a way to make sure that we're doing everything that we can at the state level to close that gap on protection.
And Rachel, with Amigos Bravos, from your perspective, would this be an acceptable solution?
We would like to see the state, well, right now, without even the 2015 rule or the 2019 rule, without either of those rules, there are still waters in our state that aren't protected by the federal government. So regardless of any of the action on these various rules, it's important for the state to step up and protect those state water resources. I also want to add that, from a general perspective, from Amigos Bravos' perspective, we don't understand why we would make it easier to pollute streams and wetlands and put our drinking water at risk. One issue that sometimes doesn't get mentioned is that this is a big water equity issue, and water equity really matters.
So, can you explain what that means?
Sure. Yeah. Access to safe drinking water is important for healthy, thriving communities, and often it is communities that low-income communities and communities of color often suffer the impacts of failing infrastructure and polluted water, and this causes health problems. So when we talk about reducing protections to our waters in the state, reducing access to federal funds like the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund or 319 Restoration Funds, this all, it impacts all of us in New Mexico, but it often impacts communities of color and low-income communities even more than others. And so it's a big water equity issue. And that, I think, needs to be recognized and more attention devoted to that issue.
Okay. Now, Zach, what do you feel would be the best resolution to this controversy?
Well, I'm a lawyer, so I think court decisions would certainly help. Because really, you have the 2015 regulations that came out, and so that was you had multiple challenges from multiple sources winding its way through the courts. So as we started seeing decisions coming from the district courts and the federal circuits, suddenly we have a new set of regulations. So, the certainty or the clarity as far as, what is a water covered by the Clean Water Act and what is not, suddenly we're starting that process over again.
So it sounds like you would like to see something resolved.
Yeah. Clarity again is something I really would like to see. And as soon as we see, some court decision, put a little meat on the bones, you could say, okay, this is not, then people are able to make a little bit more better and educated decisions.
So now that the New Mexico Environment Department has commented on the proposed rules, they are being considered. What happens next?
Well, next in the federal rulemaking process is EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers are, I'm sure, very busy with what may be record-breaking or close to record-breaking number of comments that they got on this rule. So they're looking at all those comments. They're developing final rules, and we have to wait and see where they go next.
And that's all the time that we have today. Thank you to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests. The conversation does not have to end here. You can share your thoughts by commenting on KUNM.org or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. I'm Ty Bannerman. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Bryce Dick screened your calls with help from Taylor Velasquez. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and she live-tweeted the show today. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.